Okay. All right. Well, this is, of course, we're going to be studying Proverbs this segment in this class. And Philip, you know, came up with, I thought, a really good title here, Exploring Proverbs, which, you know, maybe more than any other book, you know, do we treat Proverbs as a book where we go in and we grab things when we need them, you know, or maybe we've had some quoted to us before, which, you know, that can be appropriate, certainly, but maybe we neglect maybe spending time with the book as a whole. And so we really want to do that in this class to explore what the book as a whole has to offer and all of the wisdom and the lessons we can take from the book. So this today will be pretty much an introductory class, an introduction. Let's see here. So we'll cover, we'll talk about why we want to study Proverbs. You know, why do we want to spend 13 lessons on this book? We'll do some introduction, kind of your standard introductory class topics. You know, who wrote it? You know, what was the audience in mind? Structure, outline, things like that. We'll spend some time looking at that. And then we want to talk about what is a proverb. I think it's helpful to think about what a proverb is, what its intended use is, maybe some of the different poetic devices that are used to help us understand the messages in these proverbs. And then we'll finish with going over the class schedule and more importantly, the goals for the class. All right, so let's jump right into why study Proverbs? Why take a whole segment to spend time in this book? Well, I think it's always good to start with the purpose, of course, and it's helpful when it's helpful when the writer of the book tells you what the purpose is, especially at the very beginning, as Solomon does here in the book of Proverbs. Look with me at the very beginning of the book, chapter 1, and I'm going to read just the first few verses here. And as I read, just be looking out for, you know, purpose statements, just a hint. It's a lot of the to and then a verb. You know, look for those as we read through here. Let's think about what the purpose of the book is. Chapter 1, verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So hopefully as we were reading that, you're picking up on some of the purpose statements. And maybe, you know, to start, to put it simply, this book is about us receiving instruction, right? You know, not all poetry has that purpose, but this book is intended to instruct us. We're intended to learn from it, to understand more after we study it. Well, you know, what are we receiving instruction on? Well, he makes it pretty clear. It's instruction in, as my version says, wise dealing. This book is about instruction in wisdom. Now, you know, right off the bat, we need to make sure we understand that this wisdom we're talking about is not maybe what maybe the idea of wisdom is commonly referred as knowing a lot of things, knowing a lot about a lot of things. That's not the idea of wisdom here in this book. It's this idea of wise dealing or wise behavior, I think, is maybe the New American Standard says, but it's this wise dealing with life. There's a practical nature to it. And hopefully, you know, we can pick up on that by some of the other words that we see here in this section. Words like prudence, you know, kind of that idea that we make good judgments and we use sense and we're thinking about the results of our actions and of our words, and words like discretion, where we have good sense about when to act, when not to act, when to speak, when not to speak. You know, it's kind of like discernment. So hopefully, you know, we think about what we understand about those words, we get the message that, you know, this isn't about a wisdom that's purely just knowing a lot, purely based on knowledge, but it's about dealing with life, navigating through life in a way that uses all of these terms that we see here. So we want to consider the purpose, receive instruction in wise dealing. He also says to understand a proverb and a saying. So it's interesting that one of the purposes of Proverbs is to help us understand how to read a proverb. We'll talk about that more here in a few minutes, but that's one of the purposes here, is to help us understand these sayings that we find here in the book. Let's also consider the audience here. If I were to ask you guys, you know, who is the audience of this book, you may say it's the son that's in chapter 1, verse 8. It's his father writing to a son. And you'd certainly be right in that, but look at the audience that's talked about here in this first section. It talks about give prudence to the simple, right? So those who are perhaps naive, ignorant, maybe those who don't even have a direction in life. It talks about the youth. You know, the youth can benefit from the lessons in this book, and maybe that goes without saying. Those who really don't have a lot of life experiences yet, and they have so much in front of them, certainly need the wisdom of this book. But it's interesting, look at the other group that he mentions here as well. In verse 4, not only the simple and the youth, but he says, let the wise hear and increase in learning, right? So those who are already wise, whether that's just referring to maybe those who are older or those who have some measure of wisdom already, they can hear and learn from this book also. So hopefully you see kind of the wide spectrum of people who need this book. The simple, the youth, the wise. It's really for everyone, with the exception of one group, right? Down there in verse 7, the last part of verse 7, fools despise wisdom and instruction. So there's one type of person or people who there's no benefit in this book for them, and it's the fool who rejects or despises that wisdom and instruction. But it's really for everyone else, right? This from simple to those who are wise, we can all benefit from this book. So consider the audience here, simple, youth, and wise, and really, really everyone. And so let's ask ourselves here at the beginning, you know, do we need the instruction in this book? I mean, we all have to go through life. We face challenges in life. Do we all need wisdom in how to navigate through the difficulties in life? Do we all need wisdom in knowing how to interact in our relationships and knowing how to manage our money, or what God would want us to do with our money, make friends, keep friends? Do we all have to deal with those things? Well, of course we do. And so we all need the lessons in this book. Why study the book? Because Proverbs gives instruction for all, okay, for all who will listen, so not the foolish, but for all who will listen. Proverbs gives instruction about a path of wisely and righteously navigating through this life. There is another path that Proverbs talks about. And we'll see a lot of contrast between this path and this other path of foolishness and wickedness. Those terms kind of become synonymous in the book. But Proverbs gives instruction about this righteous path of wisdom and righteousness in helping us to navigate through this life. I want you, can someone turn over to the book of Ecclesiastes real quick? I want to read a passage over there. If someone doesn't mind jumping in and reading from Ecclesiastes 12. Philip, do I need to unmute everyone or allow them to unmute?
No, they can do it themselves, or I'll be happy to read for you.
Yeah, either way, Ecclesiastes 12, 9 through 11. Somebody has that?
I'll go ahead and take that.
Sure.
So in addition to being a wise man, the preacher also taught the people knowledge. He pondered and searched out and arranged many proverbs. And the preacher sought to find delightful words and to write the right words of truth correctly. The words of wise men are like goads, and masters of these collections are like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd. But beyond this, my son, be warned, the writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil.
All right, great. Thank you. Yeah, I really want to focus on, you know, verse 11 there. And remember, you know, this, you know, Ecclesiastes is, you know, typically attributed to Solomon as well, just like Proverbs. But it says here, talks about how the preacher arranged these Proverbs. And in verse 11, it gives a couple kind of images there of what these Proverbs can do for us. You know, maybe we need these Proverbs to be like goads for us. You know, if you're not familiar with what a goad is, I think it was typically like maybe a sharpened stick or something that would be used to kind of prod animals along. So maybe we need those Proverbs to be like goads for us. Maybe we become stagnant on this path, and we need these to be that push for us to get us going again. Or the other image you use here, maybe we need these Proverbs to be nails for us and firmly fix us on this path. You know, maybe we have drifted, you know, away from this right path, and we've drifted to the foolish or the wicked path, and we need these Proverbs to nail us down on that right path. So I say that just to stress that maybe you're familiar with what Proverbs does have to offer. You studied it before, you studied it maybe many times, that these Proverbs can still be like goads to keep you going on this path, or maybe even nails to keep you firmly fixed on this path. Any thoughts or comments? I've kind of talked a lot to this point, but.
Hey, Jake, I appreciate you talking about audience. You brought to my eyes like verse 2 and verse 4 of Proverbs 1 says to know and to give. That's the ESV. And I just looked up the Holman and it said learning and teaching, right? That they're good for me, but I don't appreciate as much like how these are arranged so well, how they're developed so well, these wise sayings, how memorable, how pointed they are.
Yeah.
And I wish I were better at passing on wisdom in this way to others. Thankfully, I have God's words to share with my kids, arranged in such a pointed and valuable way, worded so well. So that's what's striking me right now.
That's a good point. Yeah, the verbs used there, you have one that says to receive and one to give, right? So you kind of got both sides of that, both the instruction we need to take in and pass on to others. That's a good thought. Yeah. So maybe the most important point we can make in the book, and maybe or today and even in the book, is that it begins with the fear of the Lord. There in chapter 1 and verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And in chapter 9, verse 10 actually says fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Okay, so this begins with the fear of God. And so I'd like to, we could spend this class and multiple classes talking about what this means, but I'd like to maybe get input from you guys on, well, just why must knowledge or wisdom begin with the fear of the Lord? Why must it start with that?
Well, Dave mentioned the idea of audience, and I think that's important. But to me, it speaks to the condition of the mind and the heart of the audience. I picture like a dried out sponge that's ready to receive something versus a sponge that's already full that won't take any more water. So as we're like individuals here, we should be ready and willing to take any wisdom or knowledge we can get from God and his messengers for us, so we can be in a position to serve him the way that he'd like to be served. If we think we already have all the answers, or we're not concerned about pleasing him, any wisdom that's poured on us, or that we're just not going to absorb it. It's just going to roll off of us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that humility or that accepting of the need to learn, doesn't that start with kind of our perspective of who God is, who we are, and then who God is? He's up here and we're down here, right? So that you know, you think about fear of the Lord, it's that reverence and that respect for him. It has to start there with understanding who God is, and that, you know, we need his wisdom. We need his teaching. It has to start there. You know, any of us that, you know, if we want to learn, or any subject or topic that we want to learn more about, or we need wisdom regarding that topic, it can be anything, not even spiritual. Are you going to listen to someone you respect about that topic, or someone you don't respect about that topic? You know, all of us are going to listen to someone we respect about whatever topic or subject that is. And, you know, I don't mean to demean the Lord as some kind of knowledgeable professor or something like that, but it starts with respecting who he is before we even want to listen and accept what he has to tell us.
I think that's really a good, a good point. You get the professors in college, or you get counselors in family affairs, and sometimes their wisdom sounds very, very good and appears to be something that it would be profitable. But the question needs to be asked, where did he start? Did he start with faith in God and an acceptance of the teaching of the scripture? Or did he start with evolution and just the fact that we're here by chance? That makes all the difference in the world about whether a thing is wise in marriage, for example, or when you're being mistreated, how you react. With what sounds wise, if it doesn't begin with the fear of God, is not wise, not wisdom to be accepted.
That's right. Yeah, that's well.
And we sure need to check on counselors, regardless of what they're counseling us about.
That's right. Yeah, that's well put. And I think Solomon's going to show us that it's not even just the word of God that is his wisdom, but it's the observation of the world around us. Of course, it was created by God. So, you know, all of that, we've got to be, you know, it's based on our knowledge of who God is, and he's the creator and all of his attributes, that we're open right to observing wisdom and learning from the word as well. So, yeah, and you mentioned, Sewell, about just the it becomes a basis for our everyday life and our decision making. This may some of you guys were, I'm sure, in the Nehemiah class that we just finished. But one story or one account in there that jumped out to me, I think it was in chapter 5 of Nehemiah, where Nehemiah, who was governor, he rejected the portion that was typically allotted to the governor, because it was just a burden on the people. And it says, you know, specifically in there, that he did this because of the fear of the Lord. You know, so it was the fear of the Lord and how Nehemiah saw God that prompted him to make this, you know, this, it's not an everyday decision, but to make this very practical decision about whether to take this governor's portion or not. So, you know, how do we make it the basis of our everyday lives and our decision making? Again, I wish we had more time to talk about this, but I'll leave it at this. I think that what Proverbs is going to show us is that the fear of the Lord, it becomes representative of our entire relationship with God, right? And let's not think of it as our fear of the Lord is like some sliver of our relationship with him, but it becomes kind of representative of all of it, right? So our fear of the Lord, we have, you know, confidence in him as our refuge. We trust in him. And so we're happy to, share what we have with others because we trust in him to provide. You know, we start hating evil like he does. We start treating our enemies in the way he would like. So, you know, it really becomes, again, kind of representative or the basis for our whole relationship with God. And that's what prompts us to make these decisions based on what God would have us to do.
There's one more little follow-up. James, the third chapter, makes a clear distinction between the wisdom of the world and the wisdom from above. Mm-hmm. And the wisdom of the world sounds wise if you don't fear God. But when you fear God, the wisdom of God is the one that we, and the wisdom from above is the one we pursue.
Absolutely, yeah. Philip, did you have
Jake? All of the examples that you guys have been hitting around come back to the idea of what is our goal. You know, if our goal is just Ecclesiastes 2 to have personal pleasure, then the Proverbs are not going to be very helpful in fulfilling the goal of personal pleasure. But if our goal is to honor God with our life, if our goal is to show him reverence, then the counterintuitive wisdom of the book of Proverbs is extremely helpful there because it lifts up the idea that mercy has value or generosity has value or holding my speech, even though I'm really angry. And those are counterintuitive if your goal is just like worldly personal pleasure. But to your point with verse 7, if your goal is the fear of the Lord, then all of these things start to come into alignment.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. When you say that something begins with something, and that speaks to motivation, right? And so our motivation changes with that mindset. Absolutely. All right, let's continue on. I want to make sure we at least try to get to everything. Let's introduce the book with these are kind of written in question form, but I won't ask for feedback on these. You guys can think of these to yourself, but what section of the Bible do we usually place the Proverbs in? Usually put it in the poetry and wisdom section or the poetry section, whatever you want to call it, distinguished from, you know, law and history and of course, prophecy. It's there with Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon, which we usually pull out Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes as kind of the three wisdom books in that grouping, but it's part of poetry and wisdom. Written by, well, we already mentioned Solomon. So a good portion of the book, is from the writings and the wisdom of Solomon. I think we probably all are aware of the wisdom of Solomon. You know, 1 Kings 4 talks about he's the wisest man in all the earth. People came from all over to hear what he had to say. Of course, that wisdom came from God. So Solomon wrote much of the book. There is a section in chapters 25 through 29 where the men of Hezekiah collected some of Solomon's writings. So it's still Solomon, but this was probably about 200 years later where you have these men and they're collecting other sayings of Solomon. You have a chapter 30 written by a man named Agur, if that's the right way to pronounce it. We don't know a lot about this man. There's a man named King Lemuel who writes chapter 31. Also don't know much about him as well, but these are the different writers or at least collectors of the sayings in the book of Proverbs. As well as there's a section in kind of the last half of 22 and then 23 and 24 where they very well could have been written by Solomon, but it very well could have been other sayings from other wise men. The book talks about sayings of the wise or wise sayings. And so we don't know everything about the authorship of those. It very well could have been from other wise men. Audience, we talked about this a little bit already, but, you know, there in the introduction, it really kind of talks about the spectrum, I think, of those to whom this book applies. You know, everyone but the foolish. But especially the first nine chapters are addressed from a father to a son. And that very well could be Solomon writing to one of his sons. We don't know which one, of course. I think it's also worth just keeping in mind that this father-son structure was pretty common when it came to wisdom literature, like even other nations, like Egyptian wisdom was kind of written in this format. And that makes sense, right, if we think about it, that often wisdom was passed from parents to children. And so it makes sense that wisdom literature will be written in that format. But again, it very well, you know, could have been written to one of his sons or perhaps for all of his sons. So that's the audience that we see specifically addressed, especially in the first nine chapters. And then I'll put up an outline here too, which somewhat follows the breakdown of the authors. But so the first nine chapters are a distinct section, really a set of speeches from a father to a son. Depending on how you break it up, it's anywhere from like 15 to 18 speeches about various things, really focused on things I think most applicable to young men. But he talked about even, you know, the value of wisdom and the benefits of wisdom, as well as some other practical teachings. So that's kind of a standalone section, 1 through 9. And then when you get to chapter 10, you get to, if you want to call them, kind of the one-liners. So you go through and you just have, they seem somewhat random. You know, one verse to the next may be a completely different topic, but you have those collections of sayings from Solomon in 10 through 22a. And then, as I mentioned, 22a through 24, you have the words of the wise. Those kind of go back to the father-son format in that section. And then chapters 25 through 29, you have some more proverbial sayings, the ones that were gathered from Hezekiah's men. And then chapter 30 and 31, you have the chapters written by the two men that we don't know too much about. All right, let me stop there. Any, I guess, questions or comments on just some of those introductory facts or thoughts? Let's talk about what is a proverb. If you remember, one of the purpose statements there in the beginning was to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. If anybody has the King James, I think it says like dark sayings instead of riddles, which is an interesting phrase. You know, it kind of sounds like some dark magic or something like that. But I think it's just the idea that the meaning may be hidden to an extent, may be obscure, and it's going to take some work for us to figure out what's being said. You know, it's somewhat like a parable, like we see a lot more in the New Testament, right? Parables, they would sometimes kind of obscure, and it really took some effort to think about it. And for those who really wanted to learn what it meant, were those who could spend the time you're required to figure out what the message is. So one of the purposes of the book is to help us understand those proverbs or sayings or riddles, as it puts it here. I tried to come up with a definition of a proverb. This is not too important. I just kind of pieced this together from different places, but it's usually a short saying that expresses an insight, observation, or advice of ethical wisdom that has been popularly accepted as general truth. Again, you don't have to do too much with that definition, but it's usually a short saying that gives some kind of insight into life that is generally accepted. It is written in poetic form, which is important to remember because there's several things we need to remember in light of that fact, that it is poetry. One being that it uses a few words to say a lot. You know, poetry will do that, you know, in just a few words. It's trying to give a larger message and a larger meaning. And the Proverbs are the same way. I mean, these are brief sayings, but intended to say a lot more than, you know, what just a handful of words looks like on paper. But because it's poetry, it also, that means it uses several different poetic devices. And we're going to talk about some of these. I don't mean for this to be, you know, literature class or anything like that. I think it's going to help us as we try to understand some of these, if we can understand some of the structures and some of the devices that are used with these proverbs. So let me start with, and I'm going to go over just, I'm not going to go over every single one, but mainly the primary ones that are used. We're going to start with parallelism, which you can probably decipher what that is. You put two ideas kind of side by side, and the intent is for us to look at both of them and figure out, okay, what's the second one adding to the first one? Okay, what are these adding to one another, these statements side by side? So you can break them down in a couple different categories, one being synonymous parallelism. So that's going to be where you have two statements that are pretty similar to each other. And again, we're going to look at both and think about, okay, well, what's the second one adding to the first one? Let me put up an example here. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall, right? So those are very similar statements. Different terms are used, but similar ideas. And we can, you know, pick up that pride and haughty spirit are, you know, somewhat interchangeable. Those are similar ideas, and that a fall is equated with destruction. All right. So that the second one is really reiterating, reinforcing, giving different terms from the first one. But you also have it. It's a little bit different than that one. You have a different kind of synonymous parallelism where the second thought is a little more specific. It kind of sharpens the thought in the first idea. For example, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. Right. So you have two similar ideas there, but you get it's a little more specific. Like the first one says slow to anger. Well, the second one clarifies that part of being slow to anger is overlooking an offense. Okay, so there's a lot of these throughout the Proverbs where they sound similar, but you pick up something a little deeper from the second part. I think we have another example here. Yeah, a dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. So you see, you have dishonest man in the first one, and it goes even deeper in the second part with a whisperer. So someone who goes around and they're, you know, imagine like a gossip going around and just whispering rumors or lies about people. And not only does it spread strife, but it can actually separate close friends. So you see how the meaning is a little more intense in that second part. All right, so that's synonymous parallelism. But then you have the opposite. You have antithetic parallelism, where you're going to have really two contrasting statements. Usually the word but is in there in the middle, and it's used quite a bit in chapters 10 through 15. Let me put up an example of one of these. So 10, verse 4, a slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. So you see, instead of two similar ideas, you kind of have the opposing views. And when you read it like this, is there any doubt about which one of these is the better option? Not really, right? I think that's the intent of these verses in this format is to show that it's really not a hard choice which one we ought to pursue, right? So we probably speak like this more than we know. I know I do it with my kids a lot where I'll, you know, you give them a couple choices and it's pretty clear which one they ought to choose. And so I think that's what this type of a sentence structure is going for. Like, look, there's two paths here, but there's one that's clearly the right one. It's another one here. With his mouth, the godless man would destroy his neighbor, but by knowledge, the righteous are delivered. So, like in this one here, so if you think about, put the two statements side by side, what can we pick up about the first one based on what's said in the second one? Well, we can conclude that in the first part, the godless man doesn't have knowledge, right? Because in the second part, the contrast is the righteous with knowledge. And so if you put them side by side, we can gain more insight into what's being said in the first one. So we have synonymous, we have antithetic, and then we have, we can call it better than parallelism, we can call it comparison. Two things are going to be put side by side, and the Proverbs is going to tell you what the relative value is between those two things. For example, better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fattened ox and hatred with it. So reading that, if you had to compare what's more important, the quality of the food at the dinner or the quality of the relationships at the dinner? It's pretty clear, right? The quality of the relationships is much more important. And very similar, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. So what's more important, riches and revenue or righteousness? Well, the Proverbs makes that pretty clear. Moving on from parallelism, please stop me with any questions. Otherwise, I'm going to keep going to make sure we don't run out of time. Moving on from parallelism, we have quite a bit of imagery in the book. So we have, metaphors are used quite a bit, where you have a pretty well-known image is used to give a message about maybe a lesser known idea or principle. So let me put up an example here. So whoever meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a passing dog by the ears. Now, I would imagine probably none of us have done that before, have actual experience with that, but you can imagine what that would be like if you have a dog that's just running by and you just grab a hold of his ears. You're probably going to be in some trouble, and you're probably going to wish that you had not done that. And it's the same way with someone who meddles in a quarrel, right? You're going to be in some trouble, and you're going to regret it. So that's it's an image that allows us to easily see the idea that's being described there. What about this one? Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without discretion. Even more sure that none of us have actually seen a pig with a gold ring in its snout. But it's not that hard to imagine, is it? And it's not that hard to imagine that gold ring probably wouldn't be that beautiful anymore when it's in a pig's snout. And it's the same way with a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. So a lot of these are, you can recognize them by, they'll have like or as. Those are similes, which is a form of a metaphor. But there's a lot of proverbs that have like or as in there. Not all of them. Some of them are just, some imagery is just this is this. But a lot of them have like or as. And then another imagery is personification, where you take some non-human idea or thing and you give it human characteristics. And there's really one key example of this, and that's this wisdom is personified as a woman throughout the book, especially in chapters 1, 8, and 9, I think. Wisdom is personified as a woman who's, she's crying out for, she's has her table set, and she's calling for, those to come in and learn from her wisdom. And so that's a key imagery that's used throughout the book. Okay, I'll stop there real quick. Is anybody, I guess that hopefully that made sense. Any thoughts or questions on maybe some of those poetic devices?
Yes, let me mention something. Go ahead, Phil.
Well, I was just going to mention real quick, I had the Hebrew definition for proverb means literally a comparison or to resemble, and that really comes across in all of the things that you were putting there. And I also think it's helpful to remember that just like in English poetry, we repeat sounds because we want English poetry to rhyme. So we repeat the sound over and over. But Hebrew poetry is going to repeat concepts. And so when you talked about parallelism, it's this concept, and then let me repeat that concept, or this concept, let me compare that concept. And so if you can kind of keep in your head, instead of repeating sounds, they're repeating ideas, then the poetry just is easier to follow.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, the thing I was going to say, Jake, about the, you're talking about imagery and personification, and, you know, really I think all of the Proverbs to a degree do something where they really activate your mind. They're short. You're saying they're saying a lot in very few words, but they make your mind get very active to think about, what does that mean? And, you know, what do I think these different words mean? It promotes self-discovery, which I think is, you know, the best way to learn and understand these things. It also does something where as you read these over time, over 10, 20, 50 years, you're going to read it a little different every time because it doesn't give you every last specific. And if you can fill those things in over time, you're going to learn in different ways and really get the depth of it, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point. It, not only is it amazing that these are still applicable, you know, 3,000 years later, but like you said, that maybe I read it one way when I was young, and now when I'm old, something else applies to me, or I read it in a different way based on what I'm going through currently in this life. That's a great thought. As well as, yeah, so my recommendation for any Bible reading is to read slowly, but especially the Proverbs, to read each one slowly, think about what's being said. I think they're intended to kind of mull over and think about, okay, how does this image match with this idea? So try to do that, you know, throughout this segment and this study, to read them slowly and discover what's being said there. So, James, I saw you had a hand raised. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just thinking as we're going through all these different poetic devices, it just reminds me of kind of Jesus' teaching and the way he taught, just the way that he taught it. It's a good lesson for us if we're wanting to teach, you know, whether it's our kids or even a new Christian. And we can, you know, take these devices and try to help them. I think, you know, a lot of people do that already. We could probably get that from many of our teachers who are teaching the young kids. They probably do this already. It's a great way to learn. It's probably one of the better ways to learn than just telling them point blank, you need to do this. So it's just interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's part of what made Jesus a great teacher, right? He's able to take those everyday images and concepts and teach with that. And yeah, I could be a better teacher to my children and others if I could do better at that. So yeah, Philip.
Hey, and you technically have 2 minutes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So you have 2 to 7, but you technically have 2 minutes.
All right. I'm going to skip ahead here. I may cover some of this on Wednesday, but let's skip ahead to, so this, I'll put the schedule up here just to mention that this is a little bit, so in terms of textual versus topical, this is going to be somewhat of a hybrid. So the first 4 classes will really follow the text starting on Wednesday with chapter 1, and then the chapter 1 through 9 section will cover more in a, you know, going through the text order. But then when we get to the section that's really 10 through 22, where there's a lot of the kind of the one verse Proverbs, we'll switch to more of a topical look. You can see the topics there on the screen. But then when we get to the last 3, we'll kind of go back to more of textual, and we look at some of those other collections and writings of other men. So just a FYI on that. All right. So let's get to the class goals here with the time that we have left. So we first of all we're going to read the book of Proverbs with greater understanding of the poetic devices, primary sections, and consistent themes of the book. So that's been one of the things we tried to cover in this class is, you know, if we can have an understanding of some of those poetic devices used and kind of how the book is broken up, that will allow us to understand what we're studying better. We'll try to come back to some of those, maybe mention what devices are being used just to try to reinforce this. But this goal, more than any of the other ones, hopefully we've covered to an extent in this class. We also want to equip ourselves with key verses for making wise choices that are grounded in the fear of the Lord. So as we explore this book, we really want to be able to do that, to take from it what we need to make wise choices, and to think about that idea of being grounded in the fear of the Lord. So our relationship with the Lord, you know, how that becomes the basis for, you know, what we do with our money and you know, how we treat our friends and how we treat those who are oppressed and disadvantaged. So let's that's another one of our goals for the class. Thirdly, to see more clearly the great rewards of living with godly wisdom. Hopefully we can come to appreciate that as we go through the study. On Wednesday, as we go through the first four chapters, we're going to talk a lot about the results of wisdom and the blessings of wisdom. So I would encourage you, if you can read that section before Wednesday's class, to just be looking for that, as well as through the whole study, the great rewards of living with godly wisdom. But to also raise our awareness of the foolish and tragic dangers of living a wicked life, right? So it's intended to show us these two paths, and while it's going to talk about the blessings of the wise path, it's also going to talk about the foolish path and just the pitfalls that are there for us if we go down that path. It's actually going to jump right into that in chapter one. After this introductory section, he jumps right into don't be enticed by sinners, right? I mean, it's the very first thing he jumps into, right? So we have to make sure we keep a balance there. And then lastly, to use the Proverbs to address and overcome personal struggles with godly solutions. It's just the truth that we all struggle with different things, are struggling, have struggled, will continue to, and whatever we need to pull out of this book to overcome a personal struggle of ours, please be focused on doing that. Whether it's a particular proverb that as we're going through, you just have to write down and hold on to and mull over some more. Please let, you know, these proverbs, please let this study serve as a search for solutions for those struggles. And if it needs to be a goad for you to kind of get you going, or if it needs to be a nail to kind of pin you down where you need to be, let it do that. So, I skipped some things, just kind of some other considerations about the poetic devices. We may or may not come back to those on Wednesday night, but otherwise we'll jump in on Wednesday to chapters 1 through 4. So I think the lessons are on the website. So.